Hey folks, you're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with me, Dr. Donnie, and my co-host, Chief Todd LeDuc, episode 107.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
All right, Todd, I'm going to kick this right over to you. We have two guests on today. I'll let you, if you would, please introduce them.
We do. Thanks, Donnie. And you're absolutely right. We have a great session today, and thrilled. It's hard to believe we're in over our first plus 13, 14 months of podcasts weekly, and we've had some tremendous guests on, everything from the United States Fire Administrator to labor leaders, chiefs throughout the country, and researchers, and today we've got a special treat. We've got both the director, Chief Julius Halius, and the deputy director, Chief Joanne Rice, joining us from the State of Florida Fire Marshal Office. And I want to welcome them both to today's show and thank them for taking time out of their schedules to join us.
Thank you very much, Todd. It's a privilege to be on with you today.
Thank you. And you both have had, I know, long and successful careers and have traveled different journeys to bring you to where you're at today, managing and directing the Office of the State Fire Marshal. So let's start maybe just for our listeners, because as I mentioned before we started, we've got listeners from all across the country. And Donnie tells me even we have some international listeners as well. Julius, why don't we start with it yourself, if that's okay. Maybe just tell us a little bit about your career and where that journey has taken you and bringing you to today. And then we'll ask Joanne to do the same, to share kind of her background and journey with our listeners.
Well, thank you very much, Todd. I've had a great career, successful, more than I ever imagined, really. In the early days in 1974 and in the fall of 74, I started. So coming up on 48 years, but started out as a firefighter. I went from actually the restaurant business. I was a kitchen manager in a restaurant, and I saw how great the opportunity was with the fire service, and loved working with people and helping people. So got involved in the fire department and immediately went to EMT school and couple years later to paramedic school. So got very involved in the advanced life support part in the mid to late 70s. It was really growing there in Sarasota. That was in the city of Sarasota at the time in Florida. So I had my whole career here in Florida and went up through all the ranks, lieutenant, captain, battalion, and assistant chief and fire chief, and made fire chief at the age of 38. Although I did have 18 years of service at that time. So, it was just a very, exciting career that I had there. And then we merged with Sarasota County and became a metro sized department in the mid 1990s, about 1996. So, that was really the major start of my career. And then, later on, as I became eligible for retirement, I was drafted by the Barrier Island, a Longboat Key Fire Rescue. They wanted to have a fire chief that was a paramedic because it was so heavily EMS related and everything, 90% EMS. So we did a lot of great things in fire prevention out there and EMS. And of course, then we were learning a lot, and I know we'll talk later in our story, but those 70s and 80s, we weren't taking very good care of our protective gear and things like that. So we'll talk more about that later. But when I was fire chief at Longboat Key, we started to learn a lot about firefighter health and safety. And I did in Sarasota as well, but really how to how to, you know, do more for our personnel protection and things of that nature. So I know we'll be talking more about different elements of firefighter health and safety later. So, and then of course, after 10 years at fire chief at Longboat Key, I had the opportunity to apply for the state fire marshal's office. There was a vacancy and that was, believe it or not, almost 13 years ago. So, that gave me, a whole new venture in my career to be involved in a statewide leadership position and work for 3 chief financial officers and a number of governors and stuff as well. But we report to the chief financial officer, who's the elected state fire marshal in the state of Florida. So why don't we have Joanne share a little bit about her career. We'll talk more about our recent years later in the program. Thank you, Todd.
Yeah, absolutely, Julius, and thanks for sharing. You've had certainly a long and distinguished career and have left a lasting impact on the fire service throughout the state. So thanks for sharing. Thanks for all you do and have done. Joanne, if I could ask you to kind of give us a same overview of your journey to bring you here today.
Absolutely. Todd, Donnie, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me, for sure. So I started my career actually with Gainesville Fire Rescue back in 1990. I can tell you, it wasn't something I thought I was going to get into the fire service. I had actually just finished up my bachelor's degree, and my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And after I'd finished my degree, I was able to go up and take care of her for a few months. And as I was taking care of her, we had a discussion about becoming a paramedic. Early in my college courses, I'd taken a class on first aid and kind of got that interest in it. And it kind of came back to me. And of course, my mom, being your mom, wants you to do better and more. Hey, become a doctor, go become a physical therapist. And I just got my mindset on being a paramedic. And when she passed, I was able to go back down to Miami, and I came up to Gainesville. I actually had some family living in Gainesville and went to the Florida State Fire College. And, you know, the rest is history. I went through fire school and absolutely loved having that part of the career, and became a paramedic later on. So that's kind of a quick overview of how I got in the fire service. And throughout my career, I rose through the ranks just like Julius did, lieutenant, district chief, assistant chief of the Risk Reduction Bureau, worked in the training division, became the deputy chief. And then eventually I retired as the deputy chief, but came back as the interim fire chief for several months, and then was not chosen to be the fire chief. And so I retired for good for a few months. And then the position came up with the state fire marshal's office. And I was like, wow, you know, what a perfect fit. You know, I knew that I was not going to be done with my career. I wanted to take this unique skill set that we have as fire service personnel and professionals. And so I wanted to keep using it. I wanted to continue to make the fire service better. So it's what a great opportunity to work with the director and work at the state fire marshal's office and have a positive impact on the Florida fire service and our communities here.
That's great journey and legacy. And Donnie hears me say this every episode, but it's fun to do these for a variety of reasons. But one of them being that you learn things about people you've known for a long time that you didn't know. And Julius, I didn't know you started off in the restaurant business. So you and CFO Petronas have something in common. And Joanne, if it makes your mother looking down, I'm sure very proud of you. But my parents felt the same way. And I got to tell you, I interviewed 100 physicians and asked them, would they do medical school again? And I don't think one said they would. I don't know if that's the hours, the insurance, what it is. But I know if you ask most paramedic firefighters, they say it's a love, and they certainly just struggle to not just have that in their blood. So thank you both for your careers.
That's funny.
Yeah, it really couldn't have been a better choice. It just has been so fulfilling. What a fantastic career. So many great people I've worked with. You know, there's always the downsides and the difficult calls that we go on and the challenges that we face with our health. But the people that I've worked in with and the differences that we've been able to make in our community has just been tremendous. So fulfilling.
You know, that's, I think, a great segue. Julius touched on it, you know, we've had other guests. We had some of the folks that worked with Bruno out in Phoenix back in the 70s. And, you know, they really shared that we weren't focusing really much on our own health and wellness and taking care of our troops back then. It was Chief Bruce Varner that worked with Bruno and, you know, president of the IFE International. And he said, you know, I think we, from when I was riding tailboard back in the late 60s, maybe we've come 75% of the way forward from his perspective on where we're at, health and safety. But I know retiring as well after 30 years in the Florida Fire Service and being active in Florida and on the IFC board. And I know we've really made some tremendous strides in Florida. And I think a lot of that, I don't think, I know a lot of that is collectively from the leadership from around the state. And that actually starts, in my humble opinion, with the CFO in his commitment to taking care of the men and women of public safety and the fire service. Actually, and Julius, you know this, we actually, CFO Petronas actually took time out of his busy schedule to come down to where I work now, LifeScan Wellness Centers, and spent an hour of his day learning more about early detection and comprehensive physicals. But can you all kind of, for our listeners, because I think a lot of people look to Florida as a national benchmark in the fire service, whether that's, you know, ALS, and that's starting, you know, down here early. Talk a little bit about what's been going on statewide on the health and wellness front. And I know that's a big, gigantic, mammoth, you know, behemoth question I just threw at you, and maybe we have to take it at bite-sized pieces. But there's been really a tremendous amount of work done in a relatively short amount of time. I wonder if you can just kind of put that in perspective for our listeners, and how, you know, they're listening from California or New Jersey or other states, you know, what lessons maybe can they take away?
Well, thank you, Todd. That's a, no, that's a great segue into, I'd like to share, like you said, with the leadership coming from the CFO's office and the state fire marshal's office, you know, we can set a tone. We can try to get some funding for grants and the like, and we'll talk more about grants later that we've been had some success in the last more recent years. But my first several years at the state fire marshal's office, I was still really learning about, you know, what entities are out there, and been involved with the Joint Council of Fire and Emergency Services Organizations for not only the last 13 years as director of the state fire marshal's office, but moreover, when I was president and vice president of Florida Fire Chiefs Association around 2000, 2001, 2002, I got to serve on the joint council from that particular perspective. And so I knew the strength and the capability of the joint council and the collaboration of working together. So as we were really trying to get our arms around it back around 2010, 11, and 12, not only the Florida Fire Chiefs had formed a health and safety committee, we also learned about the initiative where about 7-8 years ago, the University of Miami Sylvester Cancer Research Center, they were approached by a gentleman by the name of Keith Tyson and some others that had retired from Miami-Dade, and Keith was seeing incredible numbers of retirees and even some, you know, those still on the job in Miami-Dade that were coming down with firefighter cancer. And so he approached the University of Miami with quite a presentation. Very proud of him because he brought them a lot of data. And, you know, as professors and doctors, they wanted to see the data, and they were very impressed. And it opened some doors there that we'll talk more about, that's really come to fruition. But also the Firefighter Health and Safety Collaborative was forming, and that formed around that Southeast Florida, Palm Beach, Broward, as you're well aware, Miami-Dade, that whole very rich resource area there. And it began to spread around the state. And then also, again, with Keith and other colleagues from the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, I was starting to just see all these different collaborative efforts becoming as a tremendous synergy to bring together talent from many different areas. And then Palm Beach County was very involved in starting what is known now today as the FACE team. And that's went not only statewide, but even national and international. And that stands for Firefighters Attacking the Cancer Epidemic, or FACE team. And so that's another tremendous effort. And they have a monthly conference call with many, many involved from around the country and the world for that matter. But so all these different, concerted efforts were coming together, and it was just a matter of trying to get some of that united. And so we learned a lot about firefighter cancer and how to support that and try to mitigate exposure. But then we also then the collaborative and the health and safety committee then really started taking a very close look at mental wellness, peer support, PTSD and other impacts and stuff. And of course, then, the last few years there's been major legislation that CFO Petronas, our boss, has been very influential in being a supporter and an ambassador for those. And now Florida has took us a little while, but now we have what we think is better legislation because it did take a while. Some states adopted cancer bills and mental wellness or PTSD bills maybe even a decade ago, but then they maybe weren't refined enough and didn't really fit the bill for later on what they wanted to accomplish. And some of them have even had to go back in other states and kind of do a redo. So we were fortunate in about 2018, 19, and 20, we've gotten some major legislative things through. And so that's sort of now bringing together all that collaboration that was taking place around the state.
Yeah, no, it's that's a great overview. I know it's been rewarding, I'm sure, for myself, and I'm sure for both of you to be involved and just watch this kind of percolate and come together. I remember the formative days of the collaborative down here with Sam Eaton and Chris Bader and us just talking about, let's not recreate the wheel. If Palm Beach is doing something that Broward's not, and Miami-Dade is doing something that Palm Beach is, and how do we just share best practices and force multiply what we're all trying to do, which is take care of each other. And it's been really, really, at least for me, rewarding to watch that be a small part of it. And it's a tremendous kudos to the leadership at the state level to help facilitate that, because it doesn't happen without everyone working together. So thanks for that. And you mentioned some of the presumption. We just had Scott Mullins on taping an episode in, he's the North Carolina, president of the North Carolina Professional Firefighters, and they just worked very hard. And he mentioned how they, really studied some of the work that other states, including Florida, had done to try to make sure they got their presumption to the point that it provided the highest level of benefit to families and to those, afflicted with cancer. So it's nice to see Florida once again leading the way. And you touched on a couple issues as well. One was kind of the mental health piece continue the dialogue around cancer. I know, the Governor DeSantis's wife has been very active on the mental wellness of first responders. She's recently had her own battle with breast cancer, and we hope she's doing well in recovery. But can you talk a little bit about where and how the mental health component fits into taking care of our fire service members?
Well, thank you, Todd. And let me just mention too, I'm glad you mentioned Chris Bader and Sam Eaton with the collaborative and the FACE team, and others. Vicki Shepherd was very helpful. Many down in that area. And we mentioned Keith Tyson, and also Frank Babinak was the fire chief with Chris Bader, worked as a safety officer for Chief Babinak. Chief Babinak now got promoted to city manager and is still staying involved in many of these elements. And the mental health, I do want to mention on the mental health side, the Florida fire chiefs and the the Joint Council of Organizations worked with the Florida Professional Firefighters and put together a subcommittee under the Joint Council for mental wellness and peer support. That partly came out of Hurricane Michael, believe it or not, in 2018, when it ravaged the greater Panama City Beach area, where our boss, Jimmy Petronas, grew up. The hospital that he was born in, and also later his sons were born in, those hospitals were ravaged. It really hit home, and he called right away when we saw Hurricane Michael go from a Cat 2 to a Cat 4, which later on data proved that it was a Cat 5. And he said, "Wow, Julius, what can we do for all the first responders and firefighters that have been impacted by this catastrophic hurricane?" And so not only were we bringing in urban search and rescue teams and swift water teams and everything like that to respond for try to find anybody they could assist that may have been trapped, but we realized that, well, we got to get some teams out there. And so the Florida Fire Chiefs, the Florida Professional Firefighters, State Fire Marshal's Office, and the Florida State Firefighters Association all sent different teams, whatever they had available, and some blue tarps and chainsaw crews and everything else to help some of the firefighters, dig out of their homes even, and go check on their families. And maybe they were still on duty 2-3 days in a row trying to deal with the hurricane impact. So we learned a lot, and we realized after that tremendous event, we could, do better as a joint council and with the all the resources of the Florida Fire Chiefs, Florida Professional Firefighters, and Florida Fire Marshals Association. We just got different elements together, and they formed a really good subcommittee. And what later on, after almost 3 years of work, the benefit was that they were prepared to respond to the Surfside building collapse. And you talk about a mental health issue there of the families, the victims, the responders. That turned out to be just a tremendous challenge there. And so in addition, again, sending all the same urban search and rescue teams to Surfside for the Champlain Towers building collapse, we sent nearly 24 mental wellness peer support personnel, chaplains, and also the International Association of Firefighters sent about a dozen more from all over the country. So, and there were many other mental wellness, components from around the world actually responded there as well. So, and Joanne and I'd like Joanne to share a little bit. We're working closer and closer with the collaborative to try to see what can we do at the state to help, be involved and help them sort of, take this to a local level around the state.
Yeah, no, that would be great, Joanne. If you want to share, I know at LifeScan we just actually helped sponsor. They've got now a mobile trailer that they're going to be going around the state to continue to train clinicians, mental health clinicians, on what we do as firefighters and our unique needs. But if you can share a little bit about that with our listeners in terms of the work that's being done on that front.
So I think there continues to be a lot of training that's happening around the state, making sure that we've got plenty of peer support in all the different departments. And so that when we have issues at the local level, we've got people that are right there. One of the things the director talked about was having a team go out with Surfside, having those folks out there really, showed us that there is a tremendous need to maybe have some of those folks that are embedded or as part of our USAR teams, between Michael and Surfside, we saw the need. So now we're looking at getting that committee back together to have some discussions about how we build that out. Okay, how do we make sure that when our responders go out on these large events that they continue to be taken care of with their mental health and their behavior health and start that from day one instead of waiting until we go further into it. Some of the other things we're looking at is also trying to provide some training for company officers. I think that'll be into the future, but we're looking at some training dialogue of what do we need, because those folks that are officers on the line, they're really our biggest influencers. And, we still have the things that people are saying, hey, yeah, just suck it up. And we know that that's not what we need to do. And we need to start from the initial incident to start having conversations with folks and have them know their crews so that they can intervene at an earlier stage, you know, before something gets blown out of, not out of proportion, but gets too big for them to deal with themselves. And so that's one of the things we've been talking about at the state level. Certainly the committee's going to get back together with the Joint Council to look at the response. We're also got the Red Line Rescue with Dustin Hawkins, which I'm going to ask the director to speak a little bit more about that, but there's certainly more and more things that are happening around the state. One of the things that with Michelle Fayad, we are talking about, you know, getting our families in. The more we can get support for all of our firefighters, that they're not doing it alone, that we kind of give them an introduction to the fire service when they get started, whether it's an orientation or when they get onto a department, so that when they come in and their spouse or their partners, their husbands or wives, whatever it may be, that when they start acting different, again, that you can have early intervention, that it doesn't fester and grow without and go unchecked. And so if we can bring our families on board, it really helps our firefighters be more resilient, right? It gives them some tools to be able to de-stress, gives them some tools to know how to keep themselves moving forward in a positive way. So so there's still a lot of work to be done, but it's really tremendous the work that University of Central Florida has been doing with the Restores program. Like I said, the Red Line Rescue with Dustin Hawkins. It continues to grow. And I think what's really, really important is this collaborative, that we're not working in silos. Because I think for a long time, we had a lot of departments, a lot of individuals working on this stuff, but it was all in silos around the state, around the country, quite frankly. And with these collaboratives, it brings all those minds together. And it certainly is a benefit to the whole state and a benefit to all our communities.
Joanne, you touched on something that I just texted Todd and said, I have a question, because you were going, and I was going to bring up the families, because that's the other side of the podcast is my side is the, it's all, when I talk about work-life balance, my work has been in one, it's all foundational upon being able to take good care of ourselves, our mental health, our physical health, social and spiritual health. That becomes foundational. And then therefore, once we take care of, you know, that self-care component, we're more effective with our families as well as our career, whether it's firefighting or really any career out there, essentially. And I've been doing a lot of work with this in the fire service industry in my workshops. And it comes down to that. When you have we'll use a lack of, you know, better term, solid, right? If you have that solid family, but you have that family that's involved, they understand more, including the children and all of that, is that it does deliver that degree of resiliency back to the firefighter, so that when they do have that critical incident scene, they manage it better. They work through it better. So it was very, very happy to hear that you brought that up, that you're heading that way. And if there's anything at all, because my work is published in university textbooks in this field, if there's any way at all that I could participate in any collaborative effort, I'd be happy to get involved and share anything I can. And I'll be down in Florida here in about 4 months as well. I'm relocating.
Coming down to the warmer weather, eh?
Yes.
Out of the snow.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it's the families, we haven't paid enough attention to that. I think it's critical to have good communication, good open communication. It doesn't mean you have to go home and share every gory detail that you went through, but you got to be able to know when that person that's coming off a 24-hour shift, when they need that time to decompress and when they need the time to engage. And so, you know, it's building on a positive relationship and making sure it's open communication to say, hey, I need 30 minutes. I know you're worried about, I didn't take the trash out yesterday, but I need some time right now. And that you respect one another to be able to give each other the room for that, because, you know, we deal with some difficult things, and you may have just seen something just absolutely horrible your last 30 minutes of your shift. And you kind of got to work through that, but you also don't want to tuck it back down inside and not speak about it and just go home and act like nothing happened. You've got to be able to share that at home. So I think it's going to be a key part of that resiliency for our firefighters here. And I'd love to have your help, Dr. Donnie. And I know that it's one of the things that we want to look at, maybe either entering into orientation when you get on individual fire departments or enter into our minimum firefighter standards and trainings, whether it's just something that we can help build in those families, bring them in and have them have an introduction to what the fire service actually is. Because they're quite frankly joining the fire service, just like the person that's joining the fire service.
Yeah. And I think sharing the best practices, right? You start building best practices. And it's hard for that newly married, that young, you know, family in the fire service, whether it's, you know, the mom or the dad, whichever one or both, right? But for them to have those discussions of, I need 30 minutes because no, it's your turn to take over, watch the kids, I'm going to work, you know, and all of that in those battles. But if we, what I found in a lot of my work is the earlier we can set some of those practices in place, oh, it is so much more effective, to get them to stick.
Yeah, we got to get rid of the old notion that you can't share that. We just got to hide that and come home and have that happy face and nothing's happening. We got to be able to have that room. And I think that's just having that closeness of those relationships, because not only are we seeing increased suicides, we're also seeing a tremendous amount of substance abuse and divorces. Mm-hmm. And you know, if we can help solve some of those things to help bring that resiliency to our firefighters, that, you know, make these marriages last a little bit longer and have a better, stronger support system.
Yes. And like, I'm all, you know, I know that I, from various departments and talking to different places and everything, it's like, you know, some people, when it comes to like, you have Friday night football, big deal here in Ohio. I know it's a big deal in Florida as well. Right. You know, but does that firefighter, do they get to go, you know, can they, is it easy to swap a shift so that they can attend that Friday night football game when it's in season? It's those little family events that there's this window of time that you get to, get to have that experience with your child, right? That are we trying to be more conducive and helping each other when it comes to that? And I've, you know, as you guys are more experienced at this than I am, but I've seen some departments that, you know, bend over backwards to try to make it work. And I've seen others where, oh no, we don't swap shifts. And
well, I will tell you right now, it's been particularly difficult during COVID-19.
Yes.
Everyone is overworked. Everyone is getting mandatory overtime. And that takes a toll when you can't take that time off to get away and be with your family, to enjoy that, that family time. And it's hard to be balanced when you're getting ordered in all the time. And so, you know, I think we got some work to do on that, certainly. Mm-hmm. And we have to start looking at maybe alternative schedules. People need that time. We got to figure out what those good balances are.
Yeah. Sorry to steal it there from you, Todd. No, that got on the tangent.
You know, I think that really shines a light on, you hear me say it all the time, Donnie, I continue to learn from you where I need to work on personally and professionally. I think, if we don't have all those pieces put together, sometimes, the greatest work we're doing doesn't reach its fullest potential. So I know, at least in my career, you know, there really wasn't that emphasis on family and, you know, taking care of outside of work. So until we make sure we get that, you know, holistic approach, I think we're not doing justice to our members. So great dialogue. I want to pivot just because time-wise, and I already know we're going to have version 2.0 and probably 3.0, and invite both of you back because we literally could go on all day with the great work that's going on around the state. We've talked a lot about an emphasis on prevention and resources. But I also want to touch on early detection a little bit, and not just for our physical wellness. You know, I'm sure both of you may have seen the, you know, NFPA National Fifth Fire Service Needs Assessment was just released in December. At least when I read the chapter, the area on health and wellness, I was, a little bit dismayed that we had a lot more work to do. I think 62% of the departments reported that they didn't have any type of NFPA physicals in place. I know some of the surveys that IFC has done has shown even the ones that have physicals, they're not 1582 compliant, and only about 10% of them have any type of behavioral health screening. So I know both of you, understand the importance of early detection and the role that that plays. Obviously prevention is paramount, but in our job, sometimes we can't get to 100% prevention given the inherent occupational risks. Can you all touch, Julius, I know you've actually gone through the life scan process, and whether it's life scan or whatever physical, the importance of, the role that medical surveillance plays, both physically as well as mental wellness, and making sure that if we do have occupational issues going on, that we find them early, and what role that plays and can play statewide in reducing some of the preventable tragedies that we see or preventable health risk.
Well, thank you, Todd, for that sort of lead in, because, as you were sharing that, I was reflecting on the fact that when you talk about over 60% of the departments are not doing fire department physicals and stuff, that's very disappointing, number one. And number two, it speaks to the fact many things that we've talked about so far today is because we've had the support of our different organizations in the Joint Council, that we've had the support of our CFO and State Fire Marshal. And moreover, we also have to have the support of the Florida House and the Florida Senate, because they're the ones that help with a lot of the grants that we've been able to get for mitigation to exposure to carcinogens and other things that we've done with grants around the state. But even as you're talking about early detection and physicals, if we don't teach our leadership and get funding appropriated, very likely we can pick out a clinic and stuff. Many firefighters are not going to do it if they have to cover their own costs. And some departments say, well, your health insurance that we help pay for, that's going to cover a big chunk of it. But when you do a comprehensive life scan like we've done, fortunately, we got the support of our CFO over a decade ago for all of our fire and arson and bomb technicians to have comprehensive, I think it was your full package with the heavy metals and all the different elements that we're checking above and beyond the minimum. We're doing a comprehensive life scan. And now if you can't afford the funding for every one of your personnel every year, then do it biannual at least, so that way every year half of your personnel, and some of them may be have some other doctors that they're seeing, throughout the year and things as well. But put a program together, have a safety committee. And I know for myself, we got involved with LifeScan way back at Longboat Key when I was fire chief there. But when I went to the state, they didn't have it yet. And so we were able to build the program, get the funding support, and many of our personnel, I won't go into specifics because of HIPAA and everything, but many had multiple detections. And sometimes it was, like you said, very early that it was caught. Others were had some things that needed to possibly later even go into surgery. I know myself, I got that call from LifeScan after, in 2014, and my blood work was not what it should have been. And your staff caught that immediately, got a hold of me, redid the blood test to ensure that we weren't missing anything. And then later on, I went immediately to a specialist because the blood work came back the second time deficient. And fortunately, I had no symptoms whatsoever, Todd. And we were able to catch it early on that I had a special type of leukemia, a very rare type of leukemia. And fortunately, it was treatable because we caught it early. But my doctor told me if we hadn't caught it very, very soon at that point, that I would have just got maybe first time I got a bad cold or the flu, I probably just would have not been able to survive it because my immunity system was down and everything. So I'm a personal testimony of the importance of that. And so I look at it that it clearly saved my life. And I forget sometimes when I'm speaking at a conference and give this testimony, people ask me later, well, are you okay? I said, well, yeah, fortunately, I've had treatment, but I had to have daily blood tests, then weekly, then monthly. And now I'm, very blessed to be able to say I go, a couple times a year, but I really look forward to my blood test instead of, dreading it. So I've been fortunate that I've been able to stay healthy, and I had a couple of skin cancers. I've had a biopsy that fortunately was benign in my throat. So by continuing to do early detection and comprehensive medical exams, you can save a lot of your staff. And ultimately, that's going to save the city, county, and fire district and the state of Florida money, because wouldn't we rather be putting money in detection and prevention and mitigation than having to pay for, extremely expensive medical care down the road? So I'm a big believer, as you can tell.
No, and I get chills every time I hear you tell that story. And thankfully, you're the reason why, I'm so passionate, that we need to be making sure we're taking care and doing these exams for our troops. And Donnie's heard me say this ad nauseum. I'm going to say it again, as long as I have the pulpit. We would never, as chiefs, you're leading by example, and setting that example, but we would never think of putting our troops into an apparatus that had ball tires, spongy brakes, bad, windshield wipers. We invest in preventative maintenance, and we really need to make sure we're doing that for both the physical and the behavioral, right? Because a lot of the mental wellness issues that confront firefighters, we can screen for those. There's evidence-based good screening tools to find those challenges early and intervene. So I appreciate you sharing that candidly. I do want to be mindful of time. I think we're going to have to wrap up at this point. I know we have so much more to talk about, but I wanted to, Joanne, you look like did you want to add in?
Well, I do. If we can just have just a minute, I was going to talk about the physicals, but what I would like to talk about is a new venture that we're taking with the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, UM study, a collaboration with the State Fire Marshal and UM on a 30 in, 30 out podcast. It's about trying to help our firefighters become more resilient in their 30-year career so they can get a 30-year retirement. And so we'll be talking about firefighter health and safety. We put out our first pilot in January, and we really talked about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative at UM, give an introduction to that, and then Firefighter Cancer Awareness Month. But as we get into the subsequent editions of the podcast, we're going to be talking about skin cancer, mental health and wellness, families. We're going to get into a little bit of everything, and so we're hoping to do 4 more up through June, and then we'll continue. If we get additional grants at UM, then we'll continue the podcast. But so far, it's been well received, and so keep an eye out for that. It's 30 in, 30 out. We asked it 30 in, 30 out in 30 minutes. We want to make sure we kept it short, but it's been fun, and I'm really excited that we were able to get support for that and able to do that.
It's fantastic to see, just the messaging, and I'm sure you all probably have the same experience I've had, giving presentations at fire chiefs conferences. 20 years ago, you'd have one person in the room listening about health and safety. Now today it's standing room only. So it's good to see that we have venues such as the new podcast and just the consortiums, all the energy and synergy that's working together to make for a safer fire service. So I know we're out of time. I thank both of you for taking time out of your busy schedules. I know it's been a challenge to get us all coordinated time-wise, but I know there's so much more to talk about. I hope both of you will consider coming back on. And we'll do a version 2.0 to continue sharing the great work that you're doing and that's going on around the state of Florida. So thank you both for your leadership, and stay well and stay safe, you and your families.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.